Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, we heard in our news last week the shocking report of a teenage girl in Pakistan being abducted from her home, forced to renounce her Christian faith and to marry her abductor. And this all during a time when the country is in lockdown and supposedly somewhat safer from criminal activity. Not only that, a court has decided that no crime has been committed. How can this be? The international charity Aid to the Church in Need has talked to the child's mother and sister, and on the line to tell us more, we have John Pontifex. You are very welcome to the show, John. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. I hope you are too.
So first of all, John, can you tell us who this girl is and exactly what happened to her?
Okay, well, Myra Shabazz is a 14-year-old Christian girl from the Faisalabad district of Madina town, and she comes from a very, very poor family. And the one particular day, she was walking outside her home when a car drew up alongside, and three men came out and essentially abducted her, dragged her into the car. Two witnesses walking along the road at the same time saw this happening and became alarmed and rushed towards the car, whereupon the men who were armed started firing guns, not necessarily at them, but up in the air, and then disappeared off with the girl, with Mari, in the back of the car. And then, of course, the mother, Nikhat, was informed by these two witnesses, so they went to her home. And as soon as she heard the news, she actually had a cardiac arrest and had to be admitted to Faisalabad Hospital. And when she recovered enough to get out, she made the important step of reporting it to the police. And then after a period of negotiation, a court case went ahead. And at the court case, the family produced birth certificate, church documents, school doc certificates, and other material to prove her age. And in response, the abductor, the man in the car, the two accomplices who took her that morning, Mr. Mohammed Nakash, produced what the family of the girl believed to be fake documentation to prove that she was, in fact, 19 years of age. And then under pressure from a large number of people in the courtroom, the magistrate, Kamran Khalid, made this sensational move, this decision, that this actually was legitimate, this marriage, and that indeed it should go ahead. And for the family, this has just been unbelievable.
I have a 15-year-old daughter, okay? And I think of her as being a child. This child is 14, a full year younger. And she has been effectively taken, kidnapped, a forced marriage, and somehow a magistrate is saying, fair enough, you're grand.
Yes, that is essentially what's happened. What complicates things is that obviously you have state law in Pakistan, which only allows for marriages to take place involving women over the age of 17. But in this case, we also are aware of the pressure that comes from the mob, who believe that Islamic custom should be enforced, whereby a marriage is perfectly valid, provided the girl in question has had her first period. And this, in their mind, is not just about the girl and whether, in fact, she is legitimately married, but also about the strict enforcement of their vision of Islam, a vision that's not shared by many other Muslims, but certainly among the mob gathered in that courtroom that day and outside. They were determined to see that this be enforced. But at the heart of this is a poor young girl who is, known for her singing, known for her love of life, known for being a very bubbly personality, who, unfortunately, very cruelly had her childhood snatched away from her and is now separated from her family. And early on in the proceedings, reports reached the mother and the sister to say that Myra had been crying, desperately wanting to see her mother, and was yet under enormous pressure to accept what had happened to her and to accept this marriage and this conversion, which was really conducted all against her will.
So what's to be done, John?
Well, we have been in touch as a charity, Aid to the Church Need. We've been in touch with a number of organisations, and not least the All-Party Parliamentary Working Group for Minorities for Religious Freedom in the UK. And we have also done as much as we can to publicise this case, because what really will sway the authorities in Pakistan is if this kind of material gets into the West. They are really dependent on overseas aid coming from countries like the UK. And if there's a threat that that aid be withdrawn, they will really have to change their approach because they are so urgently in need of that support.
Now, I was going to say, we ran this story on our news last week because we obviously heard from it from you guys. But in terms of the general media, has anyone else picked up on it?
Not nearly as much as we would wish. And that is why, as a charity, we are preparing a campaign that we would envisage, because these things are very difficult to mount. We know it's going to take time. But as the summer progresses towards the autumn, we're going to be really highlighting cases of this nature because we realise that it needs a concerted, very clear campaign because these issues just aren't getting the airtime and we need to work together because these people are denied a voice, we are their voice, and we are united by a common faith that makes the call, the moral requirement to stand up for them all the stronger. And in this particular scenario, we know that against this backdrop are up to 1,000 young Christian and Hindu girls in Pakistan who are abducted every year, according to the movement for morality and peace.
1,000 every year. 1,000. That's extraordinary.
Every year, according to this human rights organization in Pakistan. And it's not something that we can tolerate in the West or indeed in any civilized society, that a young girl could walk along a road and then suddenly find herself abducted at gunpoint and for that to be upheld by the court.
And am I right in saying this is since last October now, so she's already 6 or 7 months kidnapped at this stage, is she?
No, that's actually not quite correct. What actually happened here is that the abduction took place at, on the 28th of April.
Okay.
But what you're referring to is that in the court hearing, the abductor, Mohammed Nakash, presented to the court evidence, fake evidence, to show that the two of them had been married since October last year. When,
right.
Needless to say, Myra was only 13 years of age.
Gosh.
So
it's really shameless. Yeah, it's really shameless what they're doing. Tell us how is her mother and her sister? I mean, the general family. How are they? Are they in an awful state? Are they really kind of are they determined to get her back? Are they planning anything? Are they kind of in freeze? What's going on with them?
When I spoke to them through a mutual contact called Lala Robin Daniel, who acts as an advisor and neighborhood watch coordinator in Medina town for the Christian communities. When I spoke to them, you could tell that they were in just shock. All the mother, Nigat, would say to me, "I want my daughter back. Please, whatever you can do, get her back." And she kept repeating that, repeating it again and again. And the sister, the older sister, Sari, who's age 16, 2 years older than Myra, recalled her wonderful singing voice. And she said, "I really want to hear her singing again, and I want her back with us. She is only a child." And the sense of vulnerability for that family is all the more palpable because in a very male-dominated society, they who've lost their father, these children, it's all women in that family, apart from one 12-year-old boy. They feel very vulnerable. They have very little money. Myra couldn't continue paying her school fees, or her parents couldn't, her mother couldn't, and so she had to be withdrawn from school. So they're very poverty-stricken,
right.
And they wonder who's next in this horrible scenario of abduction.
Yeah. So before I let you go, John, I'm imagining we have many, many listeners listening in with their mouths hitting the floor in absolute shock at this. Is there anything they can do? Anything we can do?
That's a really important question to ask, because the main message we want to put across is that we here are not powerless. It may feel that these things happen with impunity and there's nothing we can do. The first thing to assert is the importance, the power, the efficacy of prayer. The second thing is to write to the ambassador for Pakistan, saying something needs to be done about this. What we have on our side is the lawyer, Halil Tahir Sandhu, a very, very strong strong advocate for human rights in Pakistan, and he has said he will stop at nothing to get Myra back, and he recommended writing to the ambassadors. So we are on the cusp of change. We know that there's leverage through this issue of aid that I mentioned earlier. They're very, very sensitive in Pakistan to the West intervention in domestic affairs, and they will be very, very mindful of the possibility of losing faith in the West.
Okay, John, listen, thanks very much for talking to us today. John Pontifex, Head of Press and Information at Age of the Church in Need UK. Thank you so much for talking to us today. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.